to the She Leads podcast. I'm your host, Adrienne Garland, CEO and founder of She Leads Media, a global media company dedicated to the advancement of women leaders and entrepreneurs worldwide. I'm also an adjunct professor at NYU and Rice University, where I teach on the topic of entrepreneurship. I'm a mom to two wonderful young men and married to my best friend from college. Join me each week as I dive into raw conversations with remarkable, uncompromising, and inspirational women entrepreneurs and leaders. My hope is that these conversations and their advice will encourage you to put yourself out there and gain the visibility that you and all women deserve. We're all about stripping away the sugar-coated conversations and moving boldly in the direction of our magnificent dreams. For far too long, women have been conditioned to soften their words, modify their actions, and show up in the world to conform to outdated at best and harmful at worst cultural norms and ideals. Why? To keep those who are outside of the power structures from gaining power, prestige, wealth, and influence. This has prevented women from being recognized and respected as the powerful leaders that we truly are. The She Leads podcast is here to shine the light on all the incredible women, to encourage us to show up, speak up, and showcase the amazing work we do. Speak with confidence about the innovative and transformational thoughts that we have, and celebrate the positive impact that we are making in this world, both personally and professionally. So let's do this. Let's lead. Hi, everybody, and welcome to the She Leads podcast. I am so excited to welcome my next guest. Her name is Carol Sanford, and she is a prolific author. She's a positive contrarian. She is the founder of Interactive, Inc. She is the author of 7 best-selling books. She is a community developer. She has the Business Second Opinion podcast, regenerative business development community with over 45,000 members, and she is just a force to be reckoned with. I cannot wait to talk to Carol today. We're going to get into everything, and especially about education and what needs to change. So I just want to dive right into it today. Welcome to the She Leads podcast, Carol.
Thank you, Adrienne. I'm looking forward to it.
I cannot wait. One of the things that just struck me about your bio is that you are a prolific author and business leadership expert, and your books are required reading at Harvard, Stanford, MIT, and Google. So let's wind this all back. How did you get into doing what you're doing? And you are so involved in building community and thinking about things in a completely different way. How did you sort of start this work in the first place?
Well, first I have to say, I'm not an expert. Thank you. I always know that's intended as an honor, but I believe it's a wrong epistemology, and it has to do with how I got into this work. I have a grandfather who's of the lineage of Mohawk Native peoples. I think it's a gene that has me have the face structure, but I have his blood. And what he did is he's a person who taught by living. And so when we were taking care of his pigs or his farm, he would teach me what he called work ideas, how to work on myself. And it was more of a Socratic process. I never felt judged by him, although I did by my father. So I had this strong contrast of what it's like to learn one way and to learn another. My grandfather was never an expert. He was always a learner. Mm. He was always an explorer. And so I, from a young age, I was attracted to that. I ended up in school at UC Berkeley in the middle of the 60s, where you had the free speech movement, the civil rights, and I studied with a guy named Thomas Kuhn, who wrote a book on the structure of the scientific revolution, how science gets validated and it changes. And he was a Socratic teacher. He sat now after class with us in the basement of the Rathskeller, and we would ask him questions, and he would ask his questions back. So from a young age, I learned that being an expert was of very little use to people learning, and it blocked their learning. It got in the way of their own discovery. And the other thing these people all did for me is made me look at myself while I was engaged. Like when a kid is in school and they get denied something, could I learn to watch what happened to me and how I interpreted that? That was more important than the action out there. They always made it a discovery. So,
oh my gosh,
that's how I kind of got into this.
Okay, I love this so much. And how lucky were you that you had a grandfather like that? I mean, that just warms my heart to begin with. And then the fact that you got to experience this through your own education. And I believe that the Socratic method of teaching is the best way to learn, right? And to learn about ourselves and how we react to things. I think it is the lifelong journey of learning. And it's so funny because before we even got on this, and it's so interesting, I think, like life is so interesting. So I was a little late to get this started here because my equipment was sort of messed up because I brought my equipment to Texas with me. And I was talking about my son. The reason I brought my equipment is because my son had to do something for this advertising school, and whatever I brought it for actually was a little bit of a disappointment. He didn't get what he had really put his like heart and soul into doing. And he actually did something that was really creative. And I, you know, I mean, I'm his mother. I think he deserved to get what, you know, he wanted. It was really good. But one of the things you said to me, Carol, is it's not so much the outcome, it's how he deals with the outcome. And that is the biggest lesson in life. And, you know, he was mad. You know, he's mad that he didn't get into this advertising school. And I can understand that, of course. You know, I sympathize with him that he didn't get in. But having the perspective of going through these disappointments in life, and you know, I'm an educator. I teach at Rice University and also at NYU. You know, I say this even though I instruct there. This stuff doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It's what you do. You know, I said to my son, don't worry about it. Go get an internship. Go get your hands dirty. If you want to be in advertising, you can be in advertising. It doesn't matter that you went to the, you know, that you're in this advertising school at the university that you're in. Who cares? You can do anything you want if you really want it. And I don't think that young people today, I don't think they understand that. I think they think that they have to follow a certain thing to do what they want to do. And that is just not true anymore. It's just not.
So it's not a part of how we do education. Education is about facts and knowledge out there, not about knowledge of being here and the way I react and how I need to grow and learn. And it's one of my biggest concerns is we have adults now who were kids for the last 50 years in school, and they were only memorizing what someone else wanted them to know, not how to find their own answers, not how to develop their own thinking, much less how to understand who they are and how they're creating the reactions around them.
Yeah.
So you and I are contrarian. My grandfather named me the positive contrarian.
Aww.
The reason he did is he said, you've always got a contrarian view, but it's going towards something better. And so that was an example of what you just said. Our view is it doesn't matter what the outcome was. What really matters is what happens inside. that's a positive contrarian, because it gives a direction that's the opposite or very different, but it has a meaningful outcome, not a I can check off the box outcome.
So do you think that that is taught or learned, or do you think that that's something that's innate?
No, I think the capacity is innate, but not the capability. So we're born with it. But in this country and in our school system, it's not capabilities not be able to use it. So I say there are schools with the capital S have to be created separately. So I have a school, a capital S school, where I work with business leaders on both the inside and the outside, the intrinsic and extrinsic. So, for example, yesterday, I ran a community event for 4 hours on why we can get rid of racism and genderism and all the other isms, and that we started with a personal reflective exercise, not a lecture of here's what I, as your expert, think you should know, but here's how you can examine yourself and see how you're doing what we're going to explore today. Don't apply it to anyone else but you. So for half an hour, I had the head of university executive teams and small businesses and mid-size doing this exercise on themselves. They learn how to do that, how to notice when they're reactive, ego-driven, or purposeful for themselves. And now they can do it with others. And then we talked about what really are the four major domains and errors that cause us to have racism and so forth. But again, always applying it to themselves. That's a very different way to teach. And what I was bringing is the capability to exercise the capacity. And we know that the innate capacity, we'll call it, is there because we have oxytocin. Oxytocin, as you know, a mother, if we look directly back and forth with a baby, we build a bond. And if we don't, they get separated. You have to rebuild that oxytocin. Well, it's true in business. That sounds weird. Not just with parents, but everyone we know. And we would judge everybody in isolation, so we don't build the connection. If people can learn to understand how their capacity to make sense of themselves and work with other people to develop, then each of us, you, me, all people who are teaching, and I teach at university level also. If we learn that, now we can grow that innate capacity into a capability. Sorry, I have ALS, and so I get out of breath a bit easily. So sorry to be gasping here.
No, you're not at all. No, this is all so fascinating, and I completely agree with you. You know, it's so funny. I teach at NYU, I teach an entrepreneurship class. At Rice, I teach an entrepreneurship class too. It's slightly different. And I also take students on, I was just in Panama, as I was saying before too, I take students on these global field experiences. So we get out into these different countries and we work on projects that are in the startup ecosystems in these different countries. It's so beautiful and fascinating.
Wonderful.
Oh my God, I love it so much. Yeah. But in the class that I teach at NYU, I think it's a little unexpected because the students come in and they, of course, think that they're going to learn how to start a business, which they do. You know, we get there. But I do a lot of work on the inner part first because I say, you show up in your business, whether you like it or not. And so we have to understand who we are before we can start a business. And a lot of the students are like, I didn't know I was coming to therapy, you know, but you do need to know that, because if you don't understand where you're, you know, where you kind of like even sabotage your own self, you're going to sabotage your business, right? And we really don't want to be doing that. So we find these parts of ourselves, and it's uncomfortable a lot of times for these students.
Well, and even more so, not only do we sabotage, we don't realize our potential. Because I do. I'm so appreciative that you told that story and that you do that work. I yesterday introduced the idea, and most of my people are, companies are entrepreneurial. I said, if you want to know who you are, you have to get to your identity, not your identification. Because we tend to get trapped in what we identify with, this group, this religion, this ideology, this set of friends, and we don't have an identity that's based on our essence.
Yeah.
And if you look at yourself, you have two aspects. One you learn from the world, and one you probably come in with, who knows, but the difference between essence and personality. Personality is conditioned by your family, your church, your neighborhood, your nation, and I work all over the world also, so I really appreciate that aspect of your work too. But if we don't learn how to discover our essence, we never find that and realize it. But that's why my grandfather said to me, you're a positive contrarian.
Yeah.
I learned early to annoy people with a better idea. The other thing about my essence is I disrupt certainty. So every book I have, all my workshops, every podcast I run, I disagree immediately. I don't even know I'm going to do it. Like I said, I'm not an expert. And then people go, what? Wait, is that a good thing or bad thing? So I wake people up at the core of who I am. It runs through everything I do, and it makes a huge difference in how I can engage and what people can discover. So
I love that.
I think your message may, you can't do anything until you know who you are. And it takes a whole lifetime to figure that out completely. Yeah. It's not decide who you will be. It's discover who you are. And that's
so true.
A big difference. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, it is. I'm just like nodding because yes. I mean, every year that passes, I'm like, oh my gosh, I thought I knew, you know? And you get older and older and you're like, okay, I don't know anything anymore. I just, the older I get, the more I realize that I just don't know what I thought I knew. And I'm even more open to discovering and learning now. And I almost like it more. I like not feeling like I know or that I need to know. It's much more freeing to not have to almost bear the burden of being an expert. I mean, if you call yourself an expert, you have this identity to maintain, like that you know it all, right? And so it's like easier to not call yourself an expert because you're always learning. It's easier.
So let me describe to you the process I use, because I'm on the same wavelength. I have a slightly different path to get there than you said. So let me add my thought, which is I believe that it also stops you learning when you think you're an expert, but it stops everyone learning. And I call what I do when I'm really doing my great work, long thought thinking.
Mm.
Now, let me describe what that means. I believe each of us have some kind of work. I don't believe in personal purpose. We have work to do. Mm. And my work has always been, from a young age, thinking and consciousness. Because of how I was raised and the trials and tribulations, I consider it that my entire life, and I'm about to be 82, has been about that. And I've been building. And every year I know something different and more complex and more useful and more valuable. And I tell myself I can never write or use the idea I used last year. Mm. I have to have a new evolution of it. And if I'm a professor with a class, I can't use any curriculum notes. I can't use any PowerPoints I already had. I can't pull out my past books. I'm never allowed to do the same thing twice because I'm not pushing. And and I'm not useful to the world. And so I have people who've been in my community, my membership community, for 40 years. And the reason they show up over and over is they never hear the same thing twice. Wow. All the people who were with me yesterday got my whole new evolution in thinking, which I demanded I come up with. And it's scary because what if I don't get anything new? Well, then you're useless. You may as well let go. Yeah. I am demanding that I create an evolution in my work. Mm. Therefore, I call it long thought thinking. Not over my lifetime, because it could be the same thing. And not just new content, but an extension, an evolution of something useful to the world.
Mm. And that's really interesting too, because it doesn't have to be transformational change, even if it's slightly different or looked at from a little bit of a different perspective. It's still evolution, right?
Well, we can talk about that. I've got a process I teach people in my community. It's you don't ever know whether something will be transformational. Mm. What you know is, well, you have the more complex understanding, not knowledge, not just piling on, but you can see what you used to think was incomplete. Mm. And so if it feels more complete and more complex, because life is, and you can see how things relate to each other, you couldn't see before. Mm, or you can see things are nested, you couldn't understand that they were related before. So there's some criteria for me, but you've got the idea, which is I am really trying to create useful, valuable evolution in my thinking that I can share with others they can build on or go a different direction. Mm. So it's not accumulation, which would mean you could go to tons of perspectives. You got to ask yourself, is it useful? Is it valuable?
You know what you sound like. I don't know if you know what you sound like to me.
I'd love to hear.
To me, you sound like an artist. Do you know that?
I do call what I do art sometimes.
You sound like you sound like an artist. That's what you sound like to me. Yeah.
Well, writers are one form of art.
Yeah.
It's interesting. I'm disabled, so I can't even use my hands very well, but I can use my mind. So I'm a mental artist.
You are. You're a mental artist. It's funny. I'm reading some book. It's back there. I can't even recall the name of it. And it is sort of about this, like, concept of evolution, but I also take an art class. I love art. And, you know, sometimes you're working on something and you're so close to it and it's kind of a mess. And, you know, you have to look at it from a different perspective or put it far away from you and you take a step back from it and then you can see something that you haven't seen before. And all of a sudden, it opens something up to you that makes you think about things in a completely different way. And I'm listening to you and I'm like, wow, she's an artist. And I don't think she knows it.
Well, I understand what you mean. I have a particular kind of art. If you let me take your metaphor here, which is an artist at work in a context.
Yeah.
So it's not me and my art. It's watching the subject, call it an evaluating process. So I'm watching the idea and how it works with people. I do white papers live instead of writing. I do things and watch how people react. That's watch what they do with it. How do they change how they're thinking? That is a kind of art because you don't know what the picture is going to look like when you start. And you don't know what you're thinking. I couldn't sleep last night. I was so excited with new ideas that came from watching people to use what I offered yesterday. Not as truth, not as knowledge, but as a process to discover. So that's why I agree with you. It's art, but it's not just me. It's a community painting together.
Yeah.
The thing that I am focused on with the She Leads podcast, I have a conference. It's all focused on women and women growing businesses and starting businesses. One of, I guess, my, you know, theses is that I believe that women should, I don't know if that's a good word or not, but, you know, women should start their own businesses because I do not believe that the way that corporate America is structured today is positive for women. I think it's not made for women. I don't think that women can thrive in corporate the way that it's structured today. And so I think that women have the opportunity to start businesses that allow them to thrive. But I don't think that women have figured out how to do it in a way that benefits them yet, because we keep building businesses based on a model that worked for men in the past. So we just keep recreating the same thing. And it's why like women don't get past the $1 million mark and all of it. And I do not have an answer. But how can some of these concepts potentially help women to start and grow businesses that do benefit them? I don't know. I don't even know what I'm asking. But
so I do. And okay. That was yesterday what I was working on. Although I would say they don't work for men either. They think they do because they've been told that's how it works. The kind of organizations and businesses and governing and everything else we build don't work for developing human potential. So I have never worked with women separately because I believe that all genders, and by the way, there are 72 of them listed in the IRS return, what's your gender? So I don't believe there's such a thing as women and men and a long list. And so the reason is the whole structure is broken. Yeah. And if your folks want to get the white paper I'm writing about this, you can join my newsletter. Okay. Either on Substack or on my website, carolsandberg.com. Now, let me add a bit more. The other thing that the reason I don't use and work with women is it forces them to become identified with something else than their own essence. We lose our identity and think of ourselves as a woman business leader as opposed to me personally. And my business creator. And I don't know what gender I am. I gave up years ago when my friends who were transgender and gay and all the other things said, well, I don't relate. I said, because you don't relate to you. You don't relate to what you can personally create. Don't think about building something for you as a woman or you'll build another isolated, bifurcated system that works maybe for women. We need for it to work for all humans.
Agreed.
The work system don't work because of three things. Behaviorism is controlling everything. Survivalism with Darwin competition. And logical positivism with science, which says everybody has to work on their own, being isolated individually. So I'm writing more about all this, but the identification rampage we have right now as men, white men identifying with being white men, and everything else is the other. And we don't want anyone doing that. We want us all looking at human and then all life. How do we build businesses that work for life? Like when you're in Panama, you're near the jungle and you're near indigenous people. I work a lot because my grandfather was Mohawk. So I would say the world doesn't work in business for at least the last 100 years since we got rid of craftsmen and became, and it's not because they're large, it's because they dropped out essence. Now, I have taken large parts of corporations and redesigned them without identification, without having to try. I don't try and undo the bad stuff. I don't try and think about how to get women and people of color and people of different ability. I don't divide them. I wrote in my last book is about what we did in South Africa in the middle of apartheid and how Mandela gave us an award for integrating 8 tribes, the Afrikaners, the English, and the native Chinese who had migrated or immigrated there, and broken down all the barriers and redesigned work. So if you want to, we don't have time today, but you could read in that one book a lot about how you break this down, and you could get more of my writing on Substack. It's the only podcast I still run. So I'm sorry I wandered around a bit there.
No, that's amazing. I'm fascinated, and I definitely want to read about all of it. This is amazing.
Well, you're amazing.
Well, thank you.
I can hear what you're doing. I can hear your intention. I can hear your questions that matter. And so all I'm trying to do is offer you personally, believing you're probably reflective of your group, some more contrarian ideas, which I think have a positive path.
They do. And, you know, it's hard because they don't resonate I don't know if they don't resonate, but they don't like monetize.
They do.
I don't know.
Oh, yeah, they do. My clients make 35 to 65% increase revenue per year.
Really?
Don't tell me they don't make money. You make more money because you make more of a difference without trying to make money.
Yeah. I definitely need to learn how to figure that out because I know that for me personally, like my intentions are in the right place, but I haven't figured it out. And I think that that has become...
That's fair.
That has become a source of frustration to me.
Yeah.
And it's funny because I started my business 10 years ago because I don't think that there is fairness in the corporate world. And at the time, I definitely was like, well, men, women. And over the years, I have come to see that it's not about men, women, and that it is about humanity. And yet the whole premise of my company is about like she leads, like women leading and everything. And I don't want it to be just about men and women. And I talk often about how it's about humanity, like for all. And so I struggle with that a little bit because it's not just about women. And in fact, I don't think that the world would be better if women ran the world. I don't. I think it needs to be balanced with everybody.
Well, it doesn't even need to be about people with specific gender. So the thing you're missing, your next step, is you can't do this alone. You can't do it by interviewing. You have to do it by being in community. That's why I've changed agents, several hundred of them, who meet every 6 weeks with for a weekend and several times in between. And what they do is they come to explore, and I give them exercises like you heard me describe yesterday. And they reflect on and hear each other. Every book I end up saying, you have to do whatever you're working on in a developmental community. Not a learning community, but a developmental one where you grow your capacity and all those around you to see the world in a more accurate way, to not polarize, to not divide and chop up things. I have seven first principles I learned from my grandfather. And anyone who would like, I've got that on Medium channel. If you look up my name on Medium, I've written about seven first principles and seven degenerative ones and why they keep us either moving forward or stuck. And they would probably be very helpful for you. But the best thing is to join with others who are asking the same important, significant question and are trying out things.
Yeah. We're going to include all of that in the show notes so people can read everything, join everything. And I see that you have a community that has 45,000 people. Is that something that people can also join? Is that on your website? How can people kind of follow you, join you, read everything that you have out there?
Well, that's made up of the number around the world who study with me currently or recently. And so if you're a change agent, like you're a teacher or a consultant, then we have something called SEED Community, S-E-E-D, hyphencommunities.com. And there's a group of people who meet there. The corporate one is on CalSanfordInstitute.com. And you can find there some podcasts and so forth. But also we meet together. Those people join me from 3 to 5 years, although now I have ALS, I'm dying in the next couple of years. But I'm not going to stop until I can't breathe.
Don't say that.
No, I'm not afraid of dying. I'm running a workshop on conscious dying. Also, you can go to CalSanford.com and see all my books. You can go to Substack. And all of these people are members that count up. I know it's probably over 50,000. That's an old number. But Substack is where I'm currently, and Medium, I'm publishing in between books. I'm working on book 8 and 9 right now.
Wow.
So if you just get on my newsletter, you're likely to get notified of things that are happening and books that are being released.
Wow. Listen, Carol, I am so happy that I got to meet you and talk to you. I am so inspired by everything that you're doing. I love that you're a positive contrarian. It's a new word in my vocabulary. So thank you for that. And I just really appreciated meeting you today, actually. Like, today was like a perfect day to meet you. And I can't wait to share this with my son as well. Hopefully he takes in a little bit of this lesson. And I am going to just follow you and read all of your stuff. And I hope that we can have another conversation soon, because I really do love the work that you're doing. It really resonates with me. And I hope that I can continue some of the work that you're doing, because I think it's beautiful. And it is needed. Our world, I think, needs to heal. And I think we need to do things in a different way so that we can continue on as human beings and not kill each other off, because that's the way we're going.
Let me tell you one last short story for your son.
Yeah.
I meet with my grandson, who's 24. And to be with him, in fact, today is the day, every Wednesday, with a reading he brings on the pillar of self-development. And we talk about it. He picks what we read. I gave him a bunch of books. And we talk about how it applies to our lives, mine and his. And that process keeps him discovering who he is. Because I have faith your son has all that same capacity. And he's young. And all he has to do is commit to discovering who he is. And he's going to be fine.
Oh, thank you so much for that. I appreciate it so much. And yeah, he's a pretty wonderful guy. And, you know, It's like they're just young and they just need to do the work to get there. But thank you so much. I really appreciate you. And I would just love to keep in touch with you, Carol.
Thank you, Adrian. And thanks for inviting me. Bye-bye.
Take care. Thank you. All of our episodes are brought to you by the She Leads Podcast Network, the podcast network for women by women. Thanks so much for listening to the She Leads Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode and you'd like to help support us, please share it with others, make a personalized post about what you took away on social media, and please leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. This helps our guests and our show to continue to gain visibility and traction. To learn more about how She Leads Media helps women to gain visibility, you can follow us on Instagram at She Leads Media, or you can head on over to SheLeadsMedia.com. If you'd like to network with me and other amazing women, don't forget to join us each year for the She Leads Live conference. Thanks again, and we'll see you soon. The She Leads Podcast Network.